Well, good afternoon. Happy Sabbath. As was mentioned, this is a Father's Day weekend here in the U.S. For those of you who may be listening in from overseas and not aware of that, for those of you who are listening in from wherever you might be on the webcast or listening in recorded later on, welcome. We're glad to have you with us. One of the great things about being a dad is having the, I don't know if you would call it an ability, a right, or responsibility to tell corny dad jokes. Kids, why do you hate your vegetables? They never say anything bad about you. Did you hear about the kidnapping? Oh, that's okay, he woke up. You know, I used to be addicted to the hokey pokey, but I turned my life around. One more. When you're driving down the road and the kids ask, look up from the video games and say, Dad, where are we? Well, you're in the car. Same place you were when we left. Well, what is a father? All of us had one, biologically speaking. The only one we know that did not have a father was Jesus Christ, biologically speaking. Most people that I know here have had good relationships with their dads over the years. And I realize that's not necessarily the case for everyone. Those relationships may have been cut short. You probably heard about the tragedy of the Cincinnati police officer that was killed yesterday, left behind three sons. It was very hard to hear that, but such is the reality in the world that we live in. Some may have known their dad and not had a very good relationship. Some may have wished they hadn't ever known their dad. I hope that, if any of that applies to you, that you've come to realize what it is a father is supposed to be. And that if you're in that situation, that you can continue to grow and understand what kind of a father relationship we are all supposed to have, whether it be with our physical father or our spiritual father. That, of course, is going to be the subject of today's message. What, then, is a father? Or, what does a father do? You can probably come up with many great examples. I've come up with three today. We'll look, of course, at how these parallel the things that our Father, our Heavenly Father, does with us. And as we go from one to one, we'll look at how each progressively builds off the other. So today we'll look at three things that fathers do with their children. Three things that fathers do with their children. So what does a father then do? Well, I'm not talking about going to baseball games or having tea parties or any of those things. And those are all good and fine and things that fathers should do with their sons and daughters. But more of an overall job description. One of the things a father does is fixes problems. Now, you might remember about a year or so ago, Mr. Kennebec gave an excellent sermon on the fixer, talking about our spiritual father who is coming to fix all the problems that this world has ever seen. And he talked about how his dad helped him fix things and showed him all sorts of skills like that. Like many of you, I certainly had that experience. I don't think a Sunday ever went by where we weren't working on something. Could be the plumbing, could be a car, electric, anything you want. And that's certainly not a complaint. I'm thankful for my dad spending all those precious Sundays with me and teaching those things because in addition to teaching those skills, that was time well spent with Dad, and I appreciate that very much. Amongst our jobs that we have with our children is helping them get out of the occasional tight spot, helping them fix something perhaps they've gotten into it. Now, sometimes that happens right away. I remember it wasn't with my son. It was actually with my brother's son. He had only been walking a few months. He was maybe 18 months old, something along that line, and somehow or another, we were over at Mom and Dad's house, and he got himself turned upside down between the couch and the coffee table. My brother and I were talking in the other room, and we just hear this quiet little, help. What is that? Help me. And we looked around, and there we see him upside down, and so he didn't panic at all, but my brother and I did, and we ran over there, and we pulled him out right away, but he was fine. Well, it's not always a physical problem that we get helped out of like that. Sometimes it's physical, but maybe a little bit deeper, maybe something we brought on ourselves. I remember receiving a phone call one night. This is when I was still living at home. And again, this was my brother. And we had a phone call and said, hey, you know what? I ran out of gas. I'm about 4 or 5 miles down the road. Can you come get me? And I overheard this whole conversation. I'm thinking, oh, no, you know, he's stuck. It's laid out. And what are we going to do? And I asked Dad, I said, well, we're going to get him? He said, yeah, well, we'll go down there in a little while. And I said, well, a little while. I said, he's stuck right now. He needs help. Don't we need to go fix him? He said, yeah, well, we'll fix him in a little while. But, you know, maybe next time we'll make sure his car is filled up before he leaves. So it was a what you might call a teachable moment. I think we've all been in those situations, either on the giving or the receiving end of them, haven't we, where we've realized that there's a moment that comes in life where a valuable lesson is learned. Whereas if we get bailed out right away, sometimes we don't tend to learn that lesson very well. It's what you might call the tough love approach. You got yourself into it, you can get yourself out. Now, that's a phrase that I will use on my kids every now and again. They'll ask me, you know, hey, Dad, I can't get the remote to turn the TV on. Well, what were you doing with it? Well, I was playing with my video game. Well, what buttons did you press? Well, I think I pressed this. I said, well, tell you what, I'm not really interested in watching TV right now. If you want to watch TV, you can figure it out. You know, let them struggle a little bit with it. This is not really unlike what God has done with us and with all of mankind, is it? He hasn't chosen to create a race of automatons that do exactly what he said. He chose to create a race that needs to learn. Go ahead and begin turning, if you would, to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, we'll start in verse 5. Hebrews 12, verse 5 says, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. As you may recognize and know, this comes from Proverbs chapter 3. How often have we ever reminded ourselves of this scripture? Maybe we got ourselves into some sort of a situation. Maybe it's the car running out of gas. Maybe it's something bigger than that. Maybe it's a financial hole. We said, wow, you know, I really got myself into this time. Now what am I going to do? We know that we've messed up, and we know that there are consequences for the actions we take. We might understand at that moment in time that God is trying to teach us something, but it's still difficult, isn't it? But we understand from that if God didn't take the time to try and teach us something, it wouldn't be showing us true love, would it? He wouldn't bother to correct us if he didn't love us. Just like kids like to have dads spend time with them, whether it's working on a car, working at a ball game, or something of that such sort, we understand kids whose dads discipline them in an effort to help fix an attitude or behavior are dads that truly love them. Verse 7 says, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? When we feel the pain, we feel the love, as my father-in-law might say. If you have children, have you ever had your children have a sleepover? And maybe they have a few of their friends come over and spend the night. And you know these kids pretty well, and you know their parents pretty well. So maybe after a while they start to get a little bit rambunctious. You know, you don't hesitate to look at not just your own children, but those visiting children and say, hey, you know, knock it off. Because you have a genuine love for these kids that aren't your own, you have that approach. You might do the same here at church even. Maybe if you see a kid out running in the hall or something along that line, a little child maybe might accidentally get under someone's feet, you wouldn't hesitate to correct them, would you? You're not just doing that because you want to make things a safer place, but you do that in an attitude of love, like we all do. Verse 8 says, but if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, in other words, we've all had to receive that correction, then you are illegitimate and not sons. You know, if there wasn't this type of correction, if God didn't try to correct us, it would be a sign of a lack of love. Well, that's not the case, is it? Verse 9 says, furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chasten us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. When God tries to correct us, when he's trying to fix a problem in our life, how do we receive it? Do we receive it in an attitude of respect, or is it a lack of respect? One of the things you learn to appreciate as a dad, as your children grow up, is that there is going to be some resistance along the way. I think for most children, their dads and their parents in general are idols up to about 10, 11, 12 years old. And somewhere in there, something starts to change, doesn't it? I know it did in me. You start to think, wow, my parents don't have a clue. You know? They don't know what they're doing. And that goes on till the time you get to be, I don't know, your mid-20s, late 20s, somewhere in there. You start to realize, wow, my parents are pretty smart. Did your parents change over that 10, 12 years? No, not at all, not at all. But our level and the way that we view them, our respect for them does. When God is trying to fix the problems in our life, do we ever do the spanking dance? You know what I'm talking about? If you have a little toddler there, you know, maybe, and they've been acting up, and it's time to take them out to the back room for a little bit of corporal punishment, and you're holding them by the hand, and they're like, I don't want to go. Do we ever do it a little agitated? Do we kind of do that spanking dance? We try to avoid it? Or do we recognize that this correction and God's laws come out of love for us, as we're reminded in Deuteronomy 10, verse 13? And we'll turn there just now. Let's go on and read in verse 11 of Hebrews 12. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Now, like having to give a spanking or some other punishment to a child, God doesn't want to see us hurt and suffer, does he? But that discipline from God does yield that fantastic and peaceable fruit of righteousness if we are willing to be fixed, to be trained by it. Verse 12. Therefore, or because of this, strengthen the hand which hangs down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be dislocated, but rather be healed. This is done so that we can be healed of our behavioral or spiritual infirmities. Like parents trying to help our children, trying to fix the situations they get themselves into, God is helping his children, us, by trying to help us work through our problems and fix issues we might have in life. Well, how then does he do that? One of the main tools that a father and mother might use is showing their children how to do things. We've recently been going through the project of rebuilding the fence at our house. I couldn't just go out to my children and say, okay, boys, I need you to go out there and stain that fence. No, I'd probably wind up with a mess on my hands. But instead, we went out there and we showed them, we spent time with them, my wife and I both, and we showed them, okay, you have to wash this down. You have to get all the dirt off of it. And you've got to take the wire brush, you've got to scrub it. And you take the stain, you put the stain on, and you rub it in, and make sure you get that first coat, a good covering, you know, but you're not going to have to get it all on that first coat, because you're going to come back with a second coat. You mean we got to do this again? Yeah, means you got to do it again. So the second thing that a father does with his children is sets an example. In fact, it's probably fair to say that we spend most of our lives setting examples for our children. Attribute number one of helping fix our children's problem can be directly related to attribute number two of the example we set. How they handle the things in life, whatever the problems may arise in the course of their lifetime, is probably going to bear close resemblance to the way that we handle problems in life. Have you ever heard the old saying, you're going to be an example in life, or what kind are you going to be? Now, that's something my dad's dad always told him, and he always told me, and I'm sure that they're not the originators of it. And I know that I haven't always set the best example. Now, I can sit here and tell you how many times I've gone there and showed my kids how to do something and said, okay, this is the way you do it, and it probably sounds like I'm a very patient person and good at doing that. Well, I'm glad there's no hidden cameras on the fence row at my house, because I'm not always the most patient person. I can quickly get upset or a little bit anxious, to say the least, if things aren't done just precisely the way that I think they should be done. Say, no, you're not doing it. Here, just give me that brush, let me do it. But that's not the way to teach, is it? You know, just as my dad set the example for my brother and sister by trying to fix things in our life by letting us work through them a little bit. And curiously enough, my sister didn't seem to have near as much trouble with that. Now, I don't know if that's because of my father's benevolence for his daughter or if it was because my brother and I tended to get ourselves into more trouble and needed more fixing and guidance along the way. I tend to think it was probably the latter. But just as he set that example by trying to show us, hey, you know what? Sometimes you need to try to fix the issues that you get yourself into. We have to show that same example to our children. We have to show them we can't bail them out every time. Sometimes they need to figure out things on their own. And hopefully in the process, we don't set a terrible example. I'm going to read a section from a book called Don't Divorce Your Children. This is written by Jennifer Lewis and William Sammons, who are pediatricians. They said this. Said, for better or worse, children look to adults to help make sense of the world they live in. Unfortunately, from the child's vantage point, much of what they are taught defies understanding. It is clear to the youngest children that what adults say is appropriate behavior bears little resemblance to what adults actually do. Children are keen observers. We all realize that the hard way. They see famous men who lie and still hold high office, adults who cheat and yet avoid being caught, and adults who kill in the name of religion. They are all too aware of adults who create problems and neglect to solve them, and adults who abuse themselves or others, but are nevertheless heralded as heroes or superstars. In this hypocritical social environment, it is not surprising that those children who not only experience questionable adult behavior at a distance, but also up close in their own families, are the children who are most at risk for growing up feeling alienated, angry, and distrustful of the adult world. So what kind of an example is it that we leave behind? Are we ever hypocritical? No, I am. Do my kids call me out on that? Oh, yeah. You don't get away with anything when it comes to children. I have a pet peeve, and that is probably like most parents' pet peeves. I like the house to be at least reasonably neat and in order. So when I come home and I find a granola bar wrapper laying out there on the floor in front of the couch, I'll call the kids in. I'll say, hey, Mutt, Jeff. Some of you may have to Google who Mutt and Jeff are, but I think a lot of you probably know who they are. I say, get in here. I said, who left this? Of course, no one left it. It just appeared there by itself. Say, are we leaving this for somebody else to clean up? Oh, no, Dad, not at all. So they'll go and they'll clean it up right away. But if my kids go out to the garage and I say, son, I need a Phillips head screwdriver, and they walk out into the garage and they can't find my tools because they're scattered all over the place, what kind of example am I being right then and there? Now, one of my pat dad answers is, well, yeah, but that's the garage. We don't live in the garage. We live in the living room. And this is my house. But that's an air of hypocriticalness, isn't it? What about the bedroom? Maybe on a little more equal playing field, you might say there. Do we get our kids to make their bed, pick up the shoes, put the clothes in the hamper, and then walk into our own bedrooms and trip over things on the floor? Does it go beyond the physical? You hear a good sermon, maybe one talking to us about how we should clean up the messes in our own lives, about how we need to have self-examination. Tell our kids how great a sermon that is. And then go home and start picking apart people for the choices they've made in their lives. Or maybe it's worse still. Maybe we're working on something in our life, and maybe it's clear to us at least, if not our children, that God's trying to correct something in our lives. But we refuse to be fixed by it. We spend our time trying to justify our bad behaviors. The Bible has a lot to say about the examples that we set. We'll turn to just a few verses here, pick them from the Old Testament. Let's first turn to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15 and verse 5. It says, "A fool despises his father's instruction, but he who receives correction is prudent." Some versions say sensible. What kind of example do we want to be to our children? Whether they're our children or those that might observe us on a weekly basis. Do we want to be an example of a fool, or do we want to be an example of a sensible person? Let's turn back a page to Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12, we'll look at verse 1. Proverbs 12 and verse 1. It says, "Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid." I'm reading from the New King James Version here. Is stupid the S word that you teach your kids not to say? I know that was one of them that we taught our kids. You know, don't go around calling each other stupid, calling people stupid. But yet that's what the Bible says about people who refuse to take correction. What kind of example are we? Let's go back to Hebrews 12 again. Hebrews 12, we'll start in verse 18. We're going to pick up a little bit of story here. It actually comes from Exodus 19 about Israel, ancient Israel. Hebrews 12, verse 18. Says, "For you have not come to the mountain that may be touched and that burn with fire, and to blackness and darkness and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet and the voice of words, so that those who heard it begged that the word should not be spoken to them any more. For they could not endure what was commanded. And if so much as a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned or shot with an arrow." Verse 21, "And so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, 'I am exceedingly afraid and trembling.'" They didn't want to hear it. They couldn't bear the voice of God telling them what they needed to do. They were doing that proverbial spanking dance. "No, no, no, I don't want to hear this." And indeed, accepting what God told them to do proved to be a recurring issue for Israel, as it does all of mankind. In addition to being a good example and being able to accept God's correction, how about other areas in our lives? What kind of examples do we set? Do we spend time running to or fro, doing the things that we want to do and neglect our families? How often do we sit down to have mealtime together? It's a busy world we live in, and it's very easy to parse up our time in so many places, so many areas, that we don't bother to spend it with family the way that we should. What about our financial situation? Do we show earnestness in how we pay our tithes and how we pay our taxes and being good stewards of the money that God's blessed us with? Dozens and dozens of times a day, we are examples to children. A couple verses that we'll turn to real quickly, probably know them by heart. Deuteronomy 6, verse 7. Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6, verse 7. Says, "You shall teach them diligently to your children, And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. In other words, all the time. All the time are opportunities for us to be examples to our children. Proverbs 22:6, we won't turn there, but you probably know that one by heart as well. Train up a child in the way that they should go, and when they are old, they will not depart from it. One more verse in the New Testament, Ephesians 6, verse 4. Ephesians 6, verse 4. It says, "And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Just as we read in Deuteronomy 6, this isn't just a suggestion, is it? This is a command. This is a command to show our children God's way and to follow that example that was set for us. What example was set? I think we all know. Let's go back to Hebrews 12 again. Hebrews 12 and verse 1. Hebrews 11, you know as well as the Heroes of Faith chapter, so called Heroes of Faith chapter. And my Bible, there's a heading in Hebrews 12, and says, Jesus, the example. Hebrews 12, verse 1, it says, "Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance to the race that is set before us." That sin that ensnares us, things that might take our time away, that hypocritical example that we can set if we're not careful. Verse 2, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Could you say author and finisher of our example? Perhaps. Who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. We can't get tired out of being an example. Jesus Christ was that example. He couldn't get tired or weary of being the example of the life that we need to live. If we have our children's best interests in mind, as God does ours, and we work with them to help fix the problems that they might have or encounter in life, and if we try to show them a positive example, what sort of a result might you and I expect? Brings us to the third thing that we'll talk about that a father does with his children, and that is enjoy rewards. There's fewer things more satisfying than when I realized my oldest son was big enough to push a lawnmower. I remember that first fall afternoon, and he was really anxious to do it, and I was kind of scared to let him try it, but I let him do it, and we had gotten the leaves together to where they could be mulched up, and he started mulching these, and I'm kind of anxiously awaiting, watching, you know, making sure nothing goes bad, making sure he doesn't get his feet too close, and wasn't too long after that I was able to sit down with my wife and enjoy a nice cold beverage on the porch while we watched them work. What about tax time? That's great, too. For all of you expecting dads, you're going to enjoy doing your taxes next year, I guarantee it. Grandchildren, they say, are the rewards for getting through those difficult teenage years with your own children. Now, I say all this tongue-in-cheek, of course. These aren't the reasons that we become a father. They might be happy little consequences along the way. But what is it that we are in parenthood for? What is it that we are in parenthood for? Hopefully, it's the same reason that God is in it. And that is, of course, to create a family to share love with. We are in it for the joy of having family. In that sense, I suppose you could say that God is in it for a reward. And that reward is a family. That reward is having sons and daughters in his kingdom, as we read about in Hebrews 2:10. In that sense, we indeed are the reward. Let's go to Psalms 127. Psalms 127. What does God say about children? Through Solomon, he said, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." No doubt about how God views it. Turn over a couple chapters. Proverbs 23. Proverbs 23. How about a book and a couple chapters? Proverbs 23, verse 24. It says, "The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and mother be glad. Let her who bore you rejoice." Children clearly are a reward and a blessing from God. That's how he views them. That's how he views us. Let's go back to Hebrews chapter 12 and begin to conclude there. Hebrews 12, verse 22. In contrast to the example of fear that Israel had set and that we can set if we are not careful, what is it that we look forward to? Hebrews 12, verse 22. It says, "But you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, to God the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect." The firstborn, the first fruits in God's kingdom. This is a reward that God wants to give us. Luke 12, verse 32 tells us that it is God's good pleasure to give us his kingdom. There can be no doubt that he wants to reward his children. Verse 24. "To Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of the sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel, see that you do not refuse him who speaks. For if they did not escape who refused him who spoke on earth, how much more shall we not escape if we turn away from him who speaks from heaven?" Don't be that fool that we read about that despises correction. Someone who rejects the fixing that our Father is trying to do in our lives, try to perform in our lives, or the fool that rejects the example of Jesus Christ. Israel couldn't endure that. Can we? Do we? Verse 26. "Whose voice then shook the earth, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not only the earth, but also heaven. Now this yet once more indicates the removal of those things that are being shaken, as of things that are made, that the things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace, by which we may serve God acceptably, with reverence and with godly fear." Verse 28 says, "Therefore," you know, when you read therefore, that means because of all this. Instead of having fear, instead of rejecting God's fixing, instead of rejecting the example that was given to us, we should take part in that everlasting reward that God desires to share with us. It's a reward that's far better than anything our fathers could ever hope to give to us. It's far better than anything I could ever hope to give to my children. Mankind, as a whole, has been rejecting the fixes, the example, and consequently the reward that God has tried to offer since the beginning of time. While our earthly dads might come in all shapes and sizes, and may have passed all sorts of various skills and tasks, wisdom, onto us, we all share a perfect Father. A perfect Father as we're told in 1 John 4, is love. From that love, it is God's good pleasure to heal our spiritual and our emotional wounds, to fix our problems, to provide us a perfect example, as he did through his Son, Jesus Christ, and who looks eagerly forward to sharing the reward of eternal life with us in his soon coming kingdom.